Welcome to Denver Community Church Online. My name is John Gettings, and I'm so glad you're joining us today. Whether you attend one of our Denver locations on a Sunday or listen online, our hope is to be a group of people who are a just, generous community, practicing love in the ways of Jesus. As you listen to this teaching, allow it to begin a conversation with you and God, you and the Bible, and you and your community. If you have any questions about this teaching or DCC, email us. And if you'd like to help financially support our community and our partners as we give away 20% of every dollar that comes in, you can text Denver Church to 77977. Thank you for joining us today.
Hi, how are we? My name is Amanda Lum, and I'm the neighborhood pastor here at Uptown. It's great to be here with all of you this morning. Thanks for coming out in the cold. If you have your Bibles, you can turn with me to Luke chapter 12. If you do not have a Bible, there should be a Bible beneath the seat in front of you or near or around you, and the page number here on the side screens is going to correspond to that Bible. If you've been with us in this season of teaching, you know that we've been talking about generosity. Here at DCC, we desire to be a just and generous community that's following in the ways of Jesus. And over the past 3 weeks, we've talked about what it practically looks like for us to live as a generous community, to live as generous people. And this morning, we're going to continue to talk about generosity and explore that idea. And we're going to talk about how actually community and generosity, they go hand in hand. So before we do that, though, I'd like for us first just to take a moment for us to pause and to take a breath and to pray together. So let's do that. Lord, thank you for this morning. Thank you for your word and the reminder it holds for us that you are a generous God. I'm thankful for the gifts, the many gifts that you have given us, one of those gifts being this place and this space where we can be together in your presence. God, I pray that we could see your generous heart this morning, that we will receive from you. And as we receive your generosity, Lord, I pray that we would then be those who are a reflection of that generosity in this world. We pray all these things in your Son's holy name. Amen. All right, Luke chapter 12. So we're going to spend all our time in Luke 12 this morning. So if you're one who wants to kind of jump back in with me when I reference the passage again or read along with me, I suggest that you keep your place here in Luke 12 as we'll keep coming back to it throughout the morning. What's happening here in Luke chapter 12 is that Jesus and his disciples are actually traveling. They're on their way to Jerusalem. And in the verses leading up to the ones that we're going to look at this morning, we're actually told that this massive crowd has formed, like thousands of people. And so Jesus and his disciples are trying to make their way through the crowds when a man comes to Jesus and has a request for him. And that's where we're going to catch up in the story this morning. We'll begin reading in verse 13. Someone in the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." Jesus replied, "Man, who appointed me a judge or an arbiter between you?" Then he said to them, "Watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Life does not consist in an abundance of possessions." And then he told them this parable. The ground of a certain rich man yielded an abundant harvest. He thought to himself, "What shall I do? I have no place to store my crops." Then he said, "This is what I'll do. I will tear down my barns and build bigger ones, and there I will store my surplus grain. And I'll say to myself, 'You have plenty of grain laid up for many years. Take life easy, eat, drink, and be merry.'" But God said to him, "You fool. This very night your life will be demanded from you. Then who will get what you have prepared for yourself? This is how it will be with whoever stores up things for themselves, but is not rich towards God." So Jesus and his disciples are making their way through the crowds when a man comes up to Jesus and tells him to tell his brother to divide the inheritance with him. Now, we don't know a lot about this man who approaches Jesus and makes this request, but we do know a few things about him based on the request that he makes. Now, the first thing that we know about this man is that he's likely the younger brother. And we know this because he's not in control of the inheritance. See, the law stated at this time that the firstborn son would be given priority with the inheritance. He would be given control over it. He would actually be given a double portion of the father's estate. And then other sons after him, they would then be given an equal portion of what's left over. So this man is not in control of the inheritance, so he's the younger brother. And he also appears to be bringing kind of like a legal matter to Jesus. It's almost as if he's asking Jesus to insert himself into this legal dispute between him and his brother, because he's referencing the law and asking Jesus to kind of be the authority and speak to it, which is interesting. We also know from this man's request that he isn't happy with how things have gone down between him and his brother surrounding their father's estate. And we know this because he's coming to Jesus and he's asking Jesus to sort it out for them. So clearly he's not happy with how it all went down. See, there has to have been some brokenness that exists between his relationship with his brother and him, because it's interesting. This man comes to Jesus in a crowd of thousands of people, and he doesn't even ask Jesus to help him. He tells Jesus, "Tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." It's interesting. How bad did things have to get between this man and his brother that he's coming to Jesus in front of everyone else and telling Jesus, "Tell my brother to do this"? I mean, how bad did it get? There must have been some brokenness or just division between the two of them. This would be like if my husband, Matt, went to one of our pastors on staff here, Dave Neuhausel, who officiated our wedding 9 years ago. This would be like if Matt went to Dave and said to Dave, "Hey Dave, here's the thing. Amanda and I, we've been arguing with each other and fighting about this one thing. And here's the thing, she's wrong, okay? I'm right. I need you to call her up. And I need you to tell her, as an authority in our marriage, because you officiate it, that she's wrong and that I'm right, and that she just needs to do what I'm asking her to do." Now, how would that conversation go with Dave if he actually decided to call me? Dave calls me up and he's like, "Hey, Amanda, here's the thing. I talked to Matt. Sounds like things are hard." But based on what Matt said, I mean, it sounds like Matt's right in this situation and you're wrong, so I think you should just do what he's saying. And I'm speaking as an authority in your marriage, so. What do you think I would say to Dave? I probably have a few choice words with my friend Dave, but I'd also probably feel like this was just a complete violation of my relationship with Matt. It'd be a complete violation of our relationship, of the trust and the intimacy that we have in our marriage, that he's going to someone else and telling them to tell me what to do, right? I mean, there had to have been some brokenness that existed in their relationship. It appears like their relationship's a bit on the rocks, right? And the last thing that we know about this man, based on his request, is that we know what the man desires in the situation. We know what he wants. He comes to Jesus, "Tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." What does he want? What's he asking for? Money. He wants his part of the inheritance. He wants what's owed to him. He wants his possessions, right? Yeah, he comes to Jesus and he says, "Tell my brother to give me what's mine. Tell him to give me what's owed to me from my father." See, it appears that this man is, interested in his financial situation. I mean, did you notice that he doesn't ask Jesus to come and mediate a conversation between him and his brother? He doesn't ask Jesus for wisdom on how to pursue right relationship with his brother. No, he just appears to be interested in his financial situation, in his possessions. It appears that this man is just choosing his possessions over his relationships. And Jesus, he sees this. What does Jesus say to the man when he makes this request? Verse 14. "Man, who appointed me a judge or an arbiter between you?" Now, right away, Jesus seems to recognize that this man is asking him something in regards to the law, right? Because this man asked him, and he goes, wait, who made me a judge, right? Who made me an arbiter between you? Like, I'm not going to speak to the legal side of things. I'm not going to make some legal decision here for you. But he doesn't stop there. He then goes on to offer the man a warning. Verse 15, he says, watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Life does not consist in an abundance of possessions. See, Jesus says, I'm not your judge. I'm not going to make some legal decision here. I'm not going to speak to the law. But then he says, but I will speak to what I see in your heart. You want me to make some decision about who's right and wrong and just tell people what to do, but I can see what's in your heart. See, Jesus seems to actually cut right to the heart of the matter. He looks at the man and he says, I see your greed. I see you choosing your possessions over relationship. I see your greed. And in this warning about being aware of all kinds of greed and that life doesn't consist in an abundance of possessions, this warning, he actually exposes what's in the man's heart. He exposes what's in the man's heart, and then he launches into this parable, telling this story that kind of paints a really powerful and vivid picture of what's in store for this man's life if he continues to choose greed, if he continues to choose possessions over relationships. He tells the story of a rich man, a wealthy man whose crops produce more than he could have ever needed or even dreamed of in this life. It tells the story of a man who says to himself, I have so much, I'm so rich, I'm so wealthy, what am I gonna do with all these crops? What am I gonna do with all this wealth? This, my friends, is what we call a humble brag. I'm so rich, I have so many things, like it's just such an inconvenience, so I don't even know what to do with all of it, right? Hashtag humble brag. He says to himself in the story, like, what am I going to do with all these things that I have, with all this grain that I've gotten? Oh, you know what I'll do? I'll tear down my old barns because they weren't big enough, and I'll build bigger ones, and I'll store all this grain up for myself. He says, I will store all my surplus grain there. And then he says to himself, I'm set for life. I have more than I'll ever need. All I have to do now is sit back, relax, take it easy, eat, drink, and be merry. The man thinks that he has everything, right? But God says to the man, you fool. You fool. Today will be your last day. You'll die. And who will benefit from all the things that you have kept for yourself? Who will benefit? No one. And then he says, this is what's in store for whoever chooses to make their life about possession and who isn't rich towards God. This is what your life will become. Now, what's this story really about? That's what I found myself asking over the last few weeks. What is this story really about? It's about a man, right? He's wealthy, he keeps everything for himself, and then he dies, and he can't take anything with him. And the question is, who will benefit? So what's this story actually about? I think it's about isolation. Did you notice that there is not a mention of another soul in the story? It's just the man. There's no mention of God. There's no mention of his neighbors, of family, friends, no one. He is completely alone. Completely alone. I mean, Jesus, in telling this parable, he masterfully shows how greed, how choosing possessions actually ultimately leads to loneliness and isolation. Did you notice that when Jesus tells the story, he only uses first-person pronouns? The man, he thought to himself, what will I do with all my wealth? I'll tear down my barns and build bigger ones. I'll store all my surplus grain there. This story is about a man who is completely alone. One translation even says, the man's talked to himself. He's having a conversation with himself about what he'll do with his wealth. He has no one. It's actually a tremendously sad story. Who's the man going to give to? Of course he's going to give to himself. He has nobody. course he only thinks about himself. He has no one to think about except for himself. He's completely alone. See, Jesus hears this man's request. I'm not going to speak to the law, but I see what's in your heart. I see the greed that's in your heart. Do you want to end up completely alone? He warns this man about this life of isolation and loneliness, right? And what's fascinating to me is that in all the movements of this story, of this interaction with Jesus, with the younger brother and with the rich fool in the parable, that we see the characters in these stories foregoing relationship to pursue possessions. We see them choose greed, which greed is really the opposite of generosity, isn't it? And when they choose greed, where does it lead them? To isolation. It leads them to loneliness. See, the rich man has no one. He's completely alone. He has plenty to give, but no one to give it to. And with no one to give to, there is no generosity, right? Where there's no community, there is no vision for generosity. See, generosity is inextricably bound to community. Community actually provides us the opportunity to give. Community, connection with other people, relationship, proximity to other people, other human beings is how we see what generosity looks like. Community actually gives us a vision for generosity. It provides us the opportunity to give. See, I've seen this to be true in my own life. This reality that community actually allows us or gives us the opportunity to be generous. I've seen this in my own life, and I've seen it to be true because my friends and my community, the people around me, my neighbors, my coworkers, those are actually the ones who have helped me to avoid the mistake that we see the younger brother making here at the beginning of the story. They helped me to loosen my grip on my possessions, on the things that I say are mine, the things that have been given to me. See, it's easy to look at this parable, and it's easy for us to see the younger brother and to see the rich fool and to really to demonize them, to judge them. Say, oh, they're just selfish. All they can think about is themselves. All they want to do is get back to themselves, right? It's easy to judge them. And I found myself over the last few weeks reading this story and being like, well, I would never do that. I'd never choose possessions over like my family or my brother. I'd never give anything away. I'd never keep it all for myself. Of course I would give some of it away. But the truth is, as I've sat with this story over the last few weeks, and I looked at the younger man and I really sat with the reality of the rich man's isolation, I began to realize I'm not actually that different. I might be more like the younger brother and the rich fool than I want to admit. See, about 9 years ago, right after Matt and I got married, our best friends came to us and they shared this vision that God had given them, this calling that God had given them on their lives to live in community with their friends. They felt called to physically live in the same house with some of their closest friends. And they asked us to join them a week after we got married. I was like, I just moved in with this guy. You want me to move in with you? So we thought about it, though. We prayed about it for a little bit, and both Matt and I were like, yeah, we have to do this, because we felt like we were so excited to actually have the chance to live in community, because we had spent so much of our time. We felt like we were spending our time and our resources and our energy just trying to like get in the same room with our friends, the people who know us and who care about us, so we could experience community. And we thought, well, maybe if we live together, then maybe that would open us up and free us up to be more generous with our neighbors and the other places that we feel called to invest in. And so we were so excited to move into community with them. We found a house that we were gonna rent, and we signed a year lease, and we're like, we're gonna pack up all our stuff and we're gonna do this. And so we knew moving into a house with our best friends, we knew that there would be some hiccups here and there. There might be some conflict between us, because living together isn't easy. We'd have some tension that we would need to navigate. And we also knew that likely living with others, things would surface in us that we weren't very proud of, things that we didn't like about ourselves, that we would hope would be changed because we chose to live in community. We knew all that was coming, but I have to be honest with you that I had no idea how quickly I would be confronted with some of the darkest parts of myself. You guys, we didn't even make it one night in the house together before this gross thing kind of surfaced in me. We had spent so long, I mean, it was the longest moving. I still have like nightmares about how moving all that stuff, and it just took forever. It was so slow, it was so hot. So we're at the end of a really, really long day moving all of our stuff into the house, first night together in our house. And the last thing that comes off of the truck is mine and Matt's brand new flat screen TV that we had just gotten right before we got married. I loved this TV. I never had like a new TV before. I mean, like, it was so pretty and nice. And so him and Brian are carrying this TV into our house. And I see them walk over and they put the TV down in the living room upstairs where our friends were living, where their stuff was. And I'm like, oh, hey guys, that goes downstairs in the basement. That's where Matt and I are. And Matt goes, oh yeah, yeah, honey, I totally forgot to tell you. I told Brian and Ariel that we could put our TV up here because the space is bigger, and then maybe we would be able to watch TV together more. And, you know, it just makes more sense. It fits better here, don't you think? And I was like, excuse me? You said what to them? And he was like, yeah, like it makes sense. Like his voice got higher because he knew I was, it totally makes sense, right? Like it makes sense, right? We're living in community with other people. So then we proceeded to get into an argument where we talked to each other like this in front of our friends because we didn't want to show that we were really, really mad. But I was so angry. One of the first things that came out of my mouth was, that's my TV. I'm sorry, I didn't see their names on the gift tag. That's my TV. It needs to go downstairs with my stuff. Matt's like, our stuff. I'm like, my stuff. Right? I was so tied to this TV. And you know what? It got so awkward that our friends actually just moved the TV downstairs while Matt and I argued with each other because they're like, it's so not worth it. Like, I mean, I was so attached. You guys, we're literally moving into a house with our friends to try to experience more community, to share more life together. And I'm like, that's mine. I look back on that first year that we lived together. We ended up living together for 8 years. That first year that we lived together, I laugh about it because in those first few months, I just laugh at how much we were like, that's mine. And I'd be like on a laundry basket, like the Lums on a laundry basket. Come on. Like you just get so attached to your things. And the truth is I moved into that house and everything that was mine I had was tight-fisted. My posture was like, yeah, it's in our house, but it's my stuff. And you'll ask me if you can use it. And it was just gross. I had no idea that that even existed in me until we moved in. Now, fast forward 8 years later, just this year was actually last year, 2019, We moved out of the house. It was so sad. It was heartbreaking for both of our families because we just loved it. But we moved just a few minutes away. And as we're packing up our stuff, we're packing things up in the kitchen and we don't even know what belongs to who anymore. I'm like, is this your Pyrex? She's like, I don't even know. I mean, there's two there, right? Here, just take one. I don't care. Take it. Are these your dishes? I don't even know. We had no idea whose was what because the truth is it did not matter. It was just stuff. And we believed that that stuff, it was all of ours. If it was in the house, it belonged to all of us. And as I prepared this teaching, I actually went to our friends and asked my husband, like, what was something that, like, living in community taught you about generosity? And every single one of us said how to be more open-handed with our things. It taught us to loosen our grip on our possessions because it wasn't mine, it was ours. God gave it to us so that we could share it with everyone else. Community gave us a vision for what it meant to be generous with our possessions, to be generous with our things. Thank God for that. And I love now that their kids can come over to our house, and I'm like, don't ask me if you can use that. That's yours. This is our house. You don't need to ask me for that. If you want a snack, go get a snack. It's yours. Because this stuff doesn't belong to me. It's all of ours. Community gives us a vision for generosity. See, it doesn't just give us a vision for generosity and how we can be generous with our possessions. I think community actually gives us vision. It gives us the ability to actually physically see the needs of other people. It helps us see what other people need, and that gives us the chance to then be generous to meet those needs. See, community actually allows me to see the woman in the airport who's traveling alone with her baby, who is screaming his head off. It allows us to actually see that woman and to see that she's doing everything she knows how to do to calm this baby down, but nothing is working. See, without community, we would stand at a distance judging this woman, rolling our eyes, saying, "Oh, I hope that woman is not on this plane with me. If she is, she better get it together. And if I'm not sitting next to them, do you know how miserable this flight's going to be for me if I'm next to her?" See, vision or community actually gives us the vision to go to this woman and say, "Hey, can I carry your bags for you?" Or, "Oh, I've been there before. You're doing so great. What can I do to help you?" See, community actually allows us to see the needs of other people. Connection with other people, proximity to other people allows us to see the needs and then be those who meet those needs. Community allows us to see that our friends who are struggling in their marriage, who are clearly hurting, we can see their need for us to just pick up the phone when they call, even though we're in a meeting and we have no time to talk. We can actually see that they need us to come over at 10:30 at night and just sit in the living room with them so they'll stop shouting at each other. Because someone else's presence actually allows them to recognize that, right? Community allows us to see their hurting and allows us to say, "You know what? I can sit in this with you. I'm here and you're not alone." Community allows us to see our friends who are facing outrageous medical bills because one of them has just been in a terrible cycling accident. It allows us to see their need, not just financially, but yes, financially, they need cash to pay these immediate bills that are weighing on them. But it also allows us to see the need that they need help with their kids, someone to watch them, because they desperately need time just to connect with each other. It allows us to see that they need meals. They need someone to help with laundry, to help mow their lawn. They actually might just need someone who sit with them and cry because this was so unexpected and they had no idea that they'd be facing this hardship. Community, it actually gives us a vision for generosity. It actually helps us see. See, community doesn't just allow us to hold our possessions loosely or just to see the needs of others, but community also grants us the permission and the space to be able to be honest about our own needs, to be able to say what we need help with, to be vulnerable enough to say, "I need you." And then our needs become the opportunity for others to be generous towards us. But here's the deal, that's hard. We always want to be the ones giving, don't we? It's hard to be the ones receiving, especially in our culture, where it just says that that's not okay. It's not okay to need other people. It's not okay to need help. But here's the thing, community actually allows us the opportunity to say, "I can't do this alone. I'm hurting, I need help." Yeah, I think about some friends of mine who, one of their family members got ill really quickly and they had to leave their home very fast to be with them. So they had to leave behind their whole home, their house, their dog, all these things just to go quickly. There wasn't a lot of time to prepare for this. But she told me this story about how their community, right after they left, basically just came in and surrounded them. They were there for emotional support and they were calling them and talking with them every day, but they were also there to take care of their house. They checked their mail for them. They mowed their lawn. They planted flowers in their yard. They took care of their dog. And they filled their fridge with meals so that when they got home, they didn't have to worry about any of that. See, she was like, I never asked for any of those things. They just did it because they saw that we needed that. She's like, and I'm so thankful for the ways that they saw me. She's like, yes, it's wonderful that they did all those things, but what meant most to me is that I didn't feel alone. I felt held. I felt surrounded. I felt seen. See, allowing her needs to be known, it actually gave her community the opportunity to love them and to show the love of Christ to them in a very difficult time. In preparing for this sermon, I want you to know, I went out and I asked so many friends in all of our community, how has generosity like been impacted by your experience of community? Wouldn't it be funny if I prepared this sermon in isolation, right? I got this one, I'm gonna do it by myself. I went out and I asked a bunch of people about it. And one of the most moving responses that I heard from one of my friends in response to the question, how has community like impacted the way that you are generous, so the way that you've received generosity? One of the most powerful answers that I'd gotten was from a friend who said, you know, for pretty much my whole life, I kept people at like arm's length, just kept them just far enough away because I wasn't sure it was okay to let them in. Because I didn't think it was okay for me to be my truest self. So why would it be okay for me to let others see who I really was? And he said, it wasn't actually people's generosity with like their finances or their things or even just like their time. It was actually how generous they were with their acceptance and their love for me. It was actually the generosity of people's grace and love towards me that allowed me to experience real transformation. He said, when I knew that I was really loved, that grace was really what was in that relationship, I actually felt for the first time in my life that I could be my true self in front of them. That I could be honest about the things that I didn't like. I could be honest about the things that I wasn't proud of or that scared me. He's like, it was actually the generosity of my friends with their love and their grace and their acceptance of me that allowed me to experience real healing for the first time in my life. See, community gives us a vision for generosity. Community makes generosity possible. See, Jesus sees the greed in this man's heart. And he says, and he offers this warning, right, by telling this parable about being completely alone. He says, well, what's the invitation for us with this? What's the invitation this morning? Well, I think maybe the invitation is, well, wait, how will we say yes to community? See, if we want to be generous, we need to say yes to community first. We need to say yes to relationship first. So how will you say yes to community today? Maybe it's calling a friend who you haven't talked to in a really long time. It's just calling to say, hey, I was thinking about you. Or maybe it's taking that step towards forgiving that person in your life who really hurt you. That doesn't mean you have to call them and say that, but maybe it's just considering it and asking yourself the question, is forgiveness possible? Maybe the answer is no, but at least you ask the question. Or maybe it's that you'll say hi to your coworker who seems to be by themselves a lot. Maybe it's saying yes to the next to the person who's sitting right next to you right now. Well, maybe when I'm done talking, but you know what I mean. Maybe it's saying yes to a Lent group. Lent is a really unique season in the church. It's a time where we get this 40 days to look within ourselves and to ask God, what is in me that's keeping me from connecting with you? What's this thing that's holding me back from experiencing fullness and wholeness in you. It's a vulnerable season, one that I believe we are meant to do with other people, with those who can make it okay for us to be our truest selves. So maybe one way you can say yes to community today is by saying yes to a Lent group. There's so many ways that we can say yes to community, but I want to acknowledge it's not always easy to do that. I get that. It's vulnerable. Sometimes it's scary. It feels risky, right? Well, my friends, we want to take those risks with you. We want to be a community that journeys with you, that journeys together. So if you're here and you're looking for ways to get connected, please go to the Next Step table after the service or email me. Let's talk about ways that we can help say yes to community. Because I think if we say yes to community, it will change our world. Because it will change the ways in which we are generous with others, the way that we receive God's generosity towards us, and the way that we give it back to this world. My friends, may we be those who say yes to community, and may we receive the vision that community gives us for generosity. It just may change everything. Let's pray together. Lord, thank you for this morning. God, I am thankful for the ways in which you are generous, for all the ways in which we can see you giving of yourself. God, may we follow your lead. May we have the courage to say yes to community, and may we see the needs of those around us. God, may we have your vision for what it is to be a generous people. Lord, help us to be like you. And all the brothers and sisters said, amen.